Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. This is Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. We're going to have a great show this morning, but as always, we are going to let Red Skelton start it off. Red, tell us.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher. Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell. He says, He says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge. Dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible. Incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others, for all, which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Folks, June 14th. And, you know, it's important because that flag stands for freedom and it stands for a lot of things. And it is recognized worldwide for as a symbol of liberty and freedom. And the many things that this great country has done for many, many people. You know, it was those men and the women in the concentration camps as they saw those American soldiers and those Allied soldiers coming together to release them. And we could start there, and we could go through example after example after example where our troops and our great country has helped people, either monetarily or with our military, or just our standard of living that we have here. We got such a great standard of living. In fact, I think we're spoiled rotten. I call us spoiled rotten Americans a lot. We've got so much. We've got so much freedom. That old glory, it still waves, folks, and it means a lot. Today's Flag Day, and today's the day we pull our flags out another occasion and we wave them. They should be waving all across the United States right now. I'll never forget 9/11. I was in Lexington, Kentucky with two good friends, and I'd come over from Evansville, Indiana, Monday night, and as we got up that next morning and saw the horrific things that had gone on in New York City, we sat and we watched the news for a while. And then my friend said, we got to get out of the house, got to get away from the news for a little while. And as we began to drive around Lexington, Kentucky, there were flags everywhere, folks. People had taken and put their flags out. And I've never seen so many flags in my entire life being flown all at the same time. I'm sure, Dan, I was living in Florida at the time. I just happened to be up in the Midwest on vacation. I'm sure it was the exact same way down there in Florida. It was about 3 weeks before I made it back to Florida because of 9/11. And that flag means something, folks. And we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning, along with some history and some politics. We have a side of politics that doesn't like the flag. They don't like what we've done. They don't like what we stand for. We got a president of the United States who basically thinks that this country has been too tall too long, and it's time for us to let somebody else be tall. Folks, that flag has been fought for so hard. As Francis Scott Key woke up that next morning looking out to see his window, to see what was going on, and he saw that flag was still standing. Since that time, it's meant a lot. I really don't agree with Woodrow Wilson a whole lot. In fact, there's a very few things probably, if him and I had the ability to sit down and discuss today, that I would agree with him. But I do agree with his decision to make June 14th, starting in 1917, Flag Day, a day where we come together as Americans and fly those colors that mean so much. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Saturday Symposium. We've got a lot to discuss, and are we going to have fun? There's all kinds of things going on right now. With that, I'll pass it to Dan.
I agree with you. The Stars and Stripes have always meant a lot to me. Old Glory, when I visit it in Washington every time we go, you know, it brings tears to my eyes because that was the flag that flew over, flew on the day Francis Scott Key wrote the Star-Spangled Banner. And what he said, you know, come dawn's early light, and that flag was still there, meant a million, you know, means so much to me. It's absolutely incredible. And you know something, the flag should always be treated with the utmost respect. So many people have paid so much of a price to keep that flag waving. And for those people in our country who do not like it, all I can say is move. We don't need you. I mean, if you want to have that attitude and if you can't stand up, look at our flag with pride, then you aren't the type we need in this country. You know, I'm sorry to say it that way, but I have no use for anybody who is not proud to look at our stars and stripes. You know, it means so much. It stands for freedom. It stands for liberty. And people need to, you know, when they see that coming down the street, and no matter what country, then all of a sudden, you know, they look at us and they say, you know, thank God for America. You know, we hear over here in the U.S., how much France hates us. Yet they take care of our American cemeteries as if it was their own children. And they actually love Americans. And so does every other country that was liberated during World War II. Because they know the stars and stripes meant freedom. And they were rid of the tyranny that they were forced to live under. That means a lot. You know, so take Flag Days very seriously and show those stars and stripes with honor and show them with pride, because that's what they deserve. And one other question. I only made $8 million this past year, Scott. So do you have $1.2 million I can borrow so I can buy a $12 million house?
I'll tell you what, Dan. I'll write you a check this afternoon, all right? I'll put a million in there so you can get some new furniture for it.
Okay.
And you know, Dan, you said something important because, you know, there was a lot of nations that were very thankful and still to this day are thankful for their freedom. And I got to experience that. When I went to Trinidad and Grenada back in it's been a little bit over a decade ago now, went down there to teach sales. And I loved Trinidad, but I wholly fell in love with the little country of Grenada. And I would encourage everybody, if you're going to take a vacation to Hawaii, and I don't want to diss Hawaii because it's one of our states, but if you want to go someplace like Hawaii but without all of the commercialism and all the people, go to Grenada. Beautiful, beautiful country. It's about 20 miles wide and about 30 miles long. It's in the shape of a paisley. And at the bottom of that paisley sits an airport. Probably one of the ugliest airports I've ever seen in my entire life. It was built by Fidel Castro. And as I got off the plane the first time, and I walked through that airport and I came out the other side, there were about 300 people standing out there. They were celebrating the arrival. I didn't realize that I was arriving on a plane with about 50 British couples. Grenada's Hawaii to Great Britain. It's where they go to relax. And one little mulatto black young man, and I didn't realize he was one of the 1,000 princes of Ethiopia. And there were 300 people out there in front of this little airport waiting to greet him. And I had my first experience with the people of Grenada. And I met a group of people who were kind and loving. And it was not very shortly after that I started getting the comments, "Oh, you're from America. You're from the United States. We love you. Thank you so much." I was thanked about, I can't even count how many times. I would say over 30 times I was thanked while I was down there for Ronald Reagan coming into Grenada in the 1980s and kicking Fidel Castro out. Because, you see, those people had been living in peaceful prosperity for many years. They had a good little nation going on. You know, it's a nation the size of maybe of actually, it's a nation about the size of a small United States city. Visalia comes to mind, is about 150,000 people. And
yeah, it's actually
all of a
smaller
sudden,
than Rhode Island.
I know it. And as as they started explaining to me the history of what had gone on, and I went down to downtown St. George's and saw where our troops went over the wall and started the battle. I saw where the massacres had occurred. I saw the hospital, university hospital, where we had 500 American students at the time. They went from absolute peace to communists marching up and down their streets holding guns and tanks running around that little country. And all of a sudden, they went from a very peaceful, safe place to a very dangerous place. And Ronald Reagan came in and told Fidel Castro, using a little bit of force, this is not going to happen, get out. And he did. And I faced that appreciation over and over and over again while I was down there. In fact, at the time, of course, that was pre-9/11, the first time I went down there. I had a passport, but all that was required to go into Grenada was a United States driver's license. We had such a good relationship with them. And the people treated me so well. And you know, Dan, I never felt... I've never felt, even in the United States, as safe as I felt in that little island nation. I hiked out of the rainforest one night. They talked me into going to Christmas in the Etang. And Grenada is kind of two volcanoes that have grown together. And between the two, up in the high country, in the middle of the island, is the Etang National Rainforest. And I'd gone up there, and half of the country was up there. There had to be 60,000 people up there, easy. And I'd ridden the bus up there, and I got ready to go back down the hill. And when I got down to where the buses were, the little cop that was standing down there, he says, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I was going to go back down the hill. Where's the buses?" And, of course, the bus was a little Toyota minivan, extended. And he says, "Oh." He says, and he knew who I was. I mean, I was the only white guy on the whole side of the island. I stood out like a sore thumb. Everybody on that side of the island knew I was there because of that. And he says, "Oh, Scott," he says, you got to wait till 3 o'clock in the morning." This was, I think, about 9 o'clock at night. He says, "There's the buses. Everybody's going to stay until it's time to close." He says, "The buses will line up probably maybe around 2 at the most." And I'm like, "You got to be kidding me." I said, "I got to go back to the hotel. I'm tired." And I said, "Well, I'll hike it." He says, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, I don't mind hiking. I like to hike." But I wasn't accounting for the fact that I was going to run out of streetlights. And I started hiking, and it was a long hike down the hill. I got chased by a couple of dogs. I was a little bit fearful of the wild monkeys that are in the forest. But, you know, I wasn't afraid of any of the people. I knew at any time I could stop and ask anybody for directions. And one time that I did, the man just stopped and pulled his pen out and wrote directions on his hand for me to show me a map. They were a wonderful, wonderful people. And they're living in peace and prosperity down there. They still have a pretty low crime rate. They really don't have any drug problems down there for the most part. It's just a wonderful, wonderful place. Beautiful place. Many, many waterfalls. They are so, so thankful for our flag. They are so thankful for what we've done for them. They still, to this day, are so thankful. Because that little tiny island could have been turned into a Haiti or a Jamaica. Could have been turned into a Cuba. But we stood up for what was right. And because of that, they still live in peace and prosperity because of the United States of America. And that's what this day is all about. That's why we fly our flag, not only for what that flag means to us, but for what that flag means to the rest of the world. The world has never seen such peace as it has over the last 200 years, even with a couple of world wars. The world has not seen such peace. And people have not seen such freedom and prosperity. We've been watching, Dan, we've been watching some of the industrial revolutionary period of the United States with Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan and some of those guys that the oil and the steel and the railroads. And we look at what, because of our freedom, what we've been able to accomplish in this great country and how it's affected the rest of the world. We are over in Africa right now working on their water problem, making sure they have clean water. We are in every country in the world in some way, somehow, trying to establish a better life for people. And you can't say that for very many countries. And that's what that flag stands for. I pass it back to you, Dan.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And I agree with you with Grenada also. It's a beautiful little island. But you do have to watch out for the monkeys. They start throwing things at you. But other than that, that's about the worst thing you have to worry about. It's a beautiful little island nation, and I miss it. Good part of the whole that whole area from Antigua and down, you know, to Trinidad and Grenada, it's all beautiful, and they love Americans. You know, because not only because we spend our money there, but they're thankful. They know what, you know, what Reagan did. And it passed down between those several little islands down there. And it's nice that we're respected, you know, and we can see it without traveling too far. And we're still respected in Europe, even though, you know, the national media likes to portray us as something bad. You know, any of the nations that were taken over by Hitler, you know, when Poland saw us coming in, and when, you know, Belgium and France, you know, they knew that they were finally liberated. And, you know, you look at what our flag stands for, and people around the world know what that means. You know, we're a nation of big hearts. You know, if our country itself is not supporting a nation, our people are. You know, our people give tens of millions of dollars to, you know, Africa and wherever else, you know, they need help. And that's the whole thing behind. See, America is a lot more than these liberals are leading on to. We have done so much in our country, actually, you know, once we lower our taxes and we downsize our federal government, we have more money to give to more people. And let the people do the giving, not the nation. Because the people actually give more, number one, because we have less overhead. And, you know, the government will give you a dime out of every dollar. You know, it's ridiculous. But, you know, back in the days when you were talking about, you know, the beginning of the industrial age and J.P. Morgan and, you know, the Rockefellers, they were the ones that created that, really, the ones that settled the West. The ones that created our nation was all created on personal money. You know, it wasn't done by a government. You know, and people don't understand that. You see, because we had so low taxation that the people could afford to invest in such projects as, you know, the International Railroad, you know, the railroads in Florida that went down to the Keys and down the west coast of the state. The entire early infrastructure of this nation was created by individual people. Government had nothing to do with it. I mean, even if you go back to, like, you know, the War of 1812, Jackson marched his troops down from Tennessee, and he put out every penny he had getting our troops down to New Orleans. And then on the way back, he asked the federal government for money, and they said they don't have it. So what he did is at each post he would stop at, he would write an IOU to every one of these posts, and it was him that brought the troops back and forth. And he had to declare bankruptcy. Again, he's one of the many people who ended up losing everything. You know, if you look at Thomas Jefferson, you know, the person we owe our Constitution to, the second president of the United States, he died in debt. It was his friends that kept his house from being taken away from him. He had to sell almost his entire book collection in order to be able to live. And then, you know, and today they're going, they're talking about our congressman, you know, paying $1,100 for their lease on their car, and they're being given to that by the federal government. They're given a food allowance of $500 a month for their own food, and then if they go out with any other, you know, any other person, they can write that off. I mean, it's ridiculous. These people are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars that, you know, while our forefathers died in bankruptcy. Now, what's wrong with this picture? You know, and they wonder why, the rhinos wonder why we have no use for them. Because they're joining the other side. They're just spending money right and left, and they don't even think about it. They think that they are owed something, when it is them who owe us. They are the ones who work for us, we the people. As Red Skelton said, you know, it's from the people to the government, not the government to the people. And I think a lot of politicians in Washington need to hear that, because they don't understand. They think that they're above us. You know, they were talking about earlier what happened in Virginia on Fox News. And they were right when they said Cantor got thrown out of office because he forgot about his constituents. He forgot about who he reports to. And he's not alone. A lot of politicians, most of them in Washington, they think they're above us. You know, and even the ones that will talk to us, you know, if we say something that gets them mad, forget it. They won't talk to us. You know, I mean, my representative refuses to talk to me. He refuses to answer my emails because I got him upset. I told him the truth. And this is the way that, you know, the average politician in Washington acts. And, you know, they're saying that Virginia is a freak and that it won't happen, you know, in the rest of the country. Well, let me tell you this. They got a lot to learn because there's an awful lot of people in this country who feel the same as I do, that I'm no longer being represented. And if I'm not being represented, then they can go, you know, take a flying leap off a short pier. You know, it's about time that we brought down people who really care about our nation and not about their wallets. You know, and it's something that's all they care about today. What benefits them? The only time they care about the people, their constituents, is when they want to get reelected. And then as soon as they're reelected, constituents, what are those? And they drop us like a hot potato. And I think Americans finally are waking up. They're smelling the coffee. And they're looking and they're finally seeing the truth. And I don't think very many people like what they're seeing. You're going to see a major, major change come November. And there's a lot of us, you have been down in the trenches, you and I included, that made this happen. And now it's going to be, with the help of the people, we can change the guard. And I'm so happy about that now, that we finally woke up enough people that we can change this country again. You know, Obama, his ratings are dropping like a rock, along with Hillary Clinton's and the rest of the gang. So we can win back this country and beginning in November. And if we continue on and we can keep on and continue on fighting for another 2 years, we can win the presidency as well, and we can set this nation back on track. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Scott.
Well, exactly, and that's what we're going to do. And I'll tell you, it's getting to be a hard battle. Because there's a lot of stuff going on in the news, and I want to kind of throw us into some of the things. You know, they're getting ready. The Taliban is marching towards Baghdad right now. And I'm going to tell you, folks, if Baghdad falls to the Taliban, you're going to watch your oil prices spike again. I'm loving the fact that we're living here in Texas, because right now on the corner over here, I can get gasoline for $3.37 for the gallon. I left California where it was almost $5 a gallon. But that's a huge tax on the American people. I'm a firm believer that we need to start doing everything we can to produce our own oil. Are there other ways of creating energy, and do we look forward to them? Yeah, we do, through the free market system. They're finding out that ethanol isn't quite all it's cracked up to be, and corn. Our good Sid Miller has some great things to say about that. You know, he said, Dan, at the convention that made the audience roar, he said, you know, I got a problem with ethanol subsidies. He says, I have a real huge problem with pouring corn, good old-fashioned corn whiskey on our crops or into our cars. But, you know, we live in a country where everything that we make is made as a petroleum product. There's nothing that you can look at in your home, from your TV to your dishwasher, that doesn't rely on petroleum. in one way or another. And we've got plenty. Let me tell you, while we're talking about states being number one and number two, Dan, Texas is getting ready to surpass Iraq in its oil production, and we're heading on, actually, where if we were a nation, we'd be the number one nation in the world producing oil out of this great state. But, you know, we've got some other things going on. BLM and the EPA are wanting to take full control over the land and the water in this great country. We've got Hillary Clinton out there saying that they were poverty-stricken when they came out of the White House, could barely afford to buy houses. Of course, making $200,000 at a speech. I don't know that I've even, with the exception of my years in Indiana, ever even saw anything close to $200,000. It is amazing what's going on today in this great country that we live in. Some of the horrific things. We've got a president who's releasing terrorists to receive basically a traitor. We found out this week that his dad is a peeping Tom that was harassing two twins, and the President of the United States is walking hand in hand with them. It's insane. It is insane what is going on in this day and age, and the people are not awake. They're still not awake. And this is that time of the day where I stand and I look at the rooftops behind my house and all those people that are in those homes. I believe that the majority of them would agree with me on basic principles, on our Tea Party principles, on our Frederick Douglass principles. Smaller government, lower taxes, responsibility in government, responsibility in spending. But the majority of them are not awake, and we've got to continue to wake them up. You know, Dan, something else that's going on in the country right now is we've got some elections that are going on that are really, really telling people exactly the way things go in Washington, D.C. We've got Thad Cochran. Looks like he's going to lose this race, this runoff. All polls have got McDaniels 3 to 6 points above. While they're claiming there in Mississippi that he's just a wonderful guy. He was one of the ones who outspent anybody else during those Bush years. Remember the Bush years, the Republicans spent like drunken sailors. I have no respect for them doing that. Well, Thad Cochran was the leader of that spending money. We just had Eric Cantor fall from his position this last week. He didn't quite know what to do about that. I think he was expecting it because you just can't be running a campaign and not knowing what's coming against you, but the rest of the American people didn't know what was coming. He outspent his opponent 10 to 1, literally 10 to 1. In fact, he spent more on stakes than his opponent spent on campaign funds.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to keep fighting. Dan, I'm going to pass it back to you. I'm trying to accomplish a couple of things here with these kids. So I'm going to pass it back to you. I'll take it here in a few minutes.
Okay. Cantor was running against an economist who spoke simple economics. And downsizing the federal government, which we can do without taking away any of our social service programs, simply by just cutting off the pork. It's, all these programs that were developed so that some guy could get elected. If we get rid of that pork, then we could split this the size of the federal government in half, and that would free up enough money that we could cover our military, cover Medicaid, cover Medicare, cover Social Security, and have enough to pay off our debt start digging into our debt. I mean, it's that simple, just cutting off the pork and getting rid of these departments that we don't need. And, when we mention this to Washington, they ignore us. And this is why we're finally saying enough is enough. And if we can knock the head of the GOP off, we can knock everybody else off too. And they may think this was a fluke, but this is only the beginning. We're fighting more and more, and more people are waking up. And as each state goes into their primaries, we're going to really target that state, and we're going to inform the people. And the faster we do that, the quicker we're going to win over the appropriate people who deserve to be in Washington, who deserve to be our representatives. Because I'll tell you this much, there's not many in Washington who deserve that title. That should be an honor that they represent the people, the constituents that voted them in. Instead, they use it as a money-making device, and they forgot why they're there. And it is shown just by where we're going right now as a nation. And it's time to take our nation back, and we need more and more people. For everybody out there listening, go there, talk to your neighbors. Explain why we're Republicans. Explain the truth. Do you realize that how many people think Martin Luther King was a Democrat, when in fact he was a conservative Republican? And his family still is to this day. It's time to wake people up and say, this is the truth. The crap you've been fed by the press and by, the Democratic Party, it's just that. It's crap. And the crap that comes out of Washington is nothing but lies. And it's time that we change that. You know, there's a saying that the truth will set you free. And it is very true. Excuse me. The truth has eluded us in Washington for a lot of years. You know, the last truthful president we had, really truthful, is Ronald Reagan. And that was a while ago. Don't you think we deserve that as Americans? Don't you think we deserve that from our politicians, the ones we elect? Don't we deserve that from our local governments, from our school board, and from our local committees? We aren't getting anywhere. It's one big lie from the bottom all the way up to the top. And it's time to change things. And where does it start? It starts at home. And as I said, all you have to do, you don't have to go to every town council meeting to learn about who's running and who is in service. All you have to do is go to a few and get to know the people who's planning to run for that office and who's the incumbent. And if you don't like what's going on in your town, there's where you start. You don't like how your kids are being taught, go to a school board meeting. Even if you don't have children, go to that school board meeting. And get to know the people who's on the school board. And get rid of the riffraff and put in there, vote in there, the people who are actually out there for the best for our children. and our grandchildren. You know, obviously I'm a little too old to have children and not in the physical shape to, but I do have grandchildren. And you know something? I want them to have the same education that I did. You know, when we went to school, we had, you know, all the basics in our earlier years. And by the time we got to juniors and seniors in high school, we were learning trigonometry and even calculus. Today, you know, they're basically still adding and subtracting as seniors. You know, one in four kids who graduate from high school can't even, you know, read the college boards. Something is wrong. I mean, if you can't read enough to get yourself into college, then something is major wrong, because it's not that high of a reading level. And this is what's happened to our country, because people have not been involved. People have fallen asleep at the wheel. And it's time to wake people up. And I know that the people listening to us today are the ones who are awake. But, you know, this is the time when we got to wake everybody else up. Not just, the groups we hang with and the people we talk openly to, but it's time to wake up every single American and say, listen, you know, here's what's going on, and we got to make a change. Because if we don't do that, we're going to lose it all. We got to get rid of the riffraff in Washington, and we got to replace them with patriots, with people who truly want what's best for this nation. And not what's best for themselves. We have lost. I mean, we don't have that right now. All we have are a bunch of self-serving people. And I, for one, am sick of it. And if I was in better health, I'd be running for office myself. Because, you know, I'm not going to lie to people. You know, I'm not going to pretend to have had a perfect life ahead of the, you know, before running for office. I'm not going to feed you that line of crap. You know, all these politicians saying, oh, how great they were as children and how great they were in college, and you know, we know it's all a lie. You know, they try to make themselves out like they're all Jesus Christ. None of us are like that. And why are we believing it? Why are we falling for the nonsense that they're feeding us? You know, do we really believe somebody went through their entire life and never made a mistake? And, you know, who, you know, went through life and they never did anything? I mean, reality is reality, folks. And I don't want you to judge me for something I did 30, 35 years ago. I'm not the same person I was 35 years ago. And anybody in my age group They aren't either. So why should they bring something up that happened when I was in college or high school or when I was in my 20s? You know, and this is what these mudslingers do. They bring up things that happened so many years ago that we can't even remember. And you know something? Americans fall for it. Now let's stop being, you know, facing a blind eye, thinking that these people are telling the truth. If these people are telling how great they were in their past, I'll be the first one to call them a liar. And they're the ones you want to walk away from. The person who says, my past really doesn't matter. It's what I stand for today. And for this, you can tell, you know, for the past 10 years, I've, you know, I haven't told a lie or anything. I don't, you know, I'm not that way. And I, if anything, I speak the truth a little too much. Sometimes people don't like to hear the truth. But, you know, something that was, you know, when I dedicated my life to God, I made a promise, and I've kept that promise. You know, every day, every morning when I wake up, I may not do it mentally, but, you know, I'm there doing what I believe God wants me to do. You know, it's because, you know, something, I believe this country was divinely created. And as a patriot, I believe that with all my heart. And now that I'm part of the group trying to save it, you know, I feel like, how can I be a person to follow if I don't follow what I'm telling? And I'm honestly, to this day right now, if you ask me something, I'll tell you the truth. If you want to go into my past, I'm going to tell you one open statement. Nobody's perfect. Neither was I. But who I am today is somebody I'm very, very proud of. God thought enough of me that in my darkest moments, when I had a major heart attack and was in a coma for 6 weeks, he thought enough of me to bring me back. And I've had several heart attacks, and each time he made sure I made it back. He even had me learn to fly, because it forced me to go for my flight physical, and that's where they caught my heart disease, just in the nick of time. Now, if that doesn't come from God, I don't know what does. And ever since, I've been doing my best to do what I think he wants me to do. And, you know, something I saw, you know, that should matter. And that's all I ask of a real politician today. Are you a patriot? You know, the first questions I want to ask any representative. You know, how much do you believe in God? How much do you believe in our Constitution? And how much do you believe in our country? Those are the three most important things to me. Because we have a president who doesn't believe in God, who doesn't believe in our Constitution, and who doesn't believe in our country. And I am honestly ashamed of that. I am ashamed that so many Americans voted for this guy who wants to destroy our nation and not make it a better place. You know, 250 years ago, we had a great group of people. Did they all get along? Heck no. They fought like tooth and nail against each other. But they had the three basic things. They had belief in God, country, and the Constitution. And that's the foundation of our nation, people. And that's what kept us going. In World War II, you know, when people were storming the beaches at Normandy, Omaha Beach, they were dropping by the hundreds. And you see a lot of them, you know, giving the sign of the cross before they jumped out of those Higgin boats, those small landing crafts. And they were being sliced in two. They were, you know, they were using their comrades' bodies as protection. But they believed in God and country so much that they didn't even think about their own lives. They thought about the lives of their comrades and finishing the job. And today, you know something? We've had a group of people tear that all apart who have taken God away from our nation, who have taken respect away from our flag. And these, to me, are not Americans. These, to me, are people that need to go. And you know something? For us, you know, we had a group in Mississippi trying to take a tiger away from his home, just because to show that, you know, how politically powerful they are. Now we have the Bureau of Land Management going state to state trying to take our land. And, you know, when they're doing it in Texas, especially, Texas wasn't even a part of the nation when the Louisiana Purchase took place. Therefore, the federal government doesn't own a drop of it.
Amen.
I mean, well, it's the truth. I mean, it's like, and the federal government's going in there like they own it. And they don't.
Come and take it.
Exactly. And I feel the same way with Florida. Come and take it.
I know you're listening, Obama, and I know you're listening, NSA, and I know you're listening to BLM, and I know you're listening, EPA. Come and take it. Go ahead, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the truth. I mean, it's like we are each a sovereign state. Every one of our states. And the federal government, when they divided up the states, they gave essentially ownership to that land And there's something called Manifest Destiny. After you've been on and homesteading, where you've been on a piece of land for so long that it actually becomes yours. And the federal government seemed to have forgotten those things. And now it's time for us to remind them. And, you know, I'll tell you this much, to all NSA and BLM and everybody else like that, try to take any of our land, you're going to meet a lot of militia people. Because we're willing to fight for our land. It's not yours, and you have no right coming into our states. Not without the permission of our people. Remember, each state is a sovereign entity within itself. And if you want me to give you the definition of sovereignty, I will. You people have forgotten what sovereignty means. And we have 50 sovereign states. And the federal government does not have the right nor legal power to enter in a state without permission from the state representatives. And that's not in Congress. That's the people in the state. That's the governor and the state Congress. Not somebody in Washington. So you better start reading up on your Constitution and start relearning what the 10th Amendment means. What sovereignty means. Because obviously you guys have forgotten about that. You know, read the 10th Amendment. You know, go to the thing, there's something called the Federalist Papers. Go read that. Maybe you'll learn something. But you've been overstepping your boundaries for way too long. And I'll tell you this right now, it's stopping here and now. And I have millions of people that agree with me in this country. You are not going to get away with any more. Because it's time that each state put their foot down and say enough is enough. And for those in Congress, we're putting you on notice also. You better start thinking about a new job. Because a lot of you are going to be unemployed come November. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Scott.
Well, just amens all the way around. And you know, I've always said, even after Barack Obama was just first elected, the federal government can only go so far before they really honk off the states. And we still have 50 states in this country, and the federal government has a real hard time really overstepping their bounds past a certain point because the states just turn around and say no. That fight's going on in Utah right now. Utah's saying no to BLM. In fact, all of the states in the West are gathering together and saying, oh, now it's time to start taking our land back. You know, the states to the east of the Mississippi River, the federal government owns like a fraction of their land, and the states to the west of the Mississippi River, dumb states out there, have turned around and let the federal government own the majority of the land. And the federal government cannot micromanage, folks. I don't care how good. And I wouldn't care if there was conservatives in charge of all of Washington, D.C. I still would not want the federal government in charge of the land. States. State sovereignty. And I'm going to tell you, Dan, I was talking with a friend this week, a little lady who's very active, Georgia, a sweet lady. Her and her husband are very, very active in politics. And asking me, what about when it comes for our guns? Here's what I told Georgia. I think Texas will be the last place they decide to start taking guns away. I think it'd be really kind of dumb if they did that. We got a gun on underneath every rock here in the state of Texas, and the Texans will fight for it. They will fight for their guns. I think they'll start someplace like Connecticut where the people are squishy. But there's a lot of things that the federal government's going to try and do over the next few years. We know that that's the pattern, that they're working on that really hard. And I just tell them in Texas, come and take it. Just go ahead. You just see how many Democrats you can honk off by that bus. You know, I don't rely on the Republicans on this one. I rely on the Texas Democrats on this one. Battleground Texas made a big, huge miscalculation. Wendy Davis is sitting at like 36% right now favorability rating. Because Texas our Democrats here are conservative. They're John F. Kennedy Democrats. They're not Barack Obama Democrats. And the majority of Texas is going to stand up and say no. And the majority of the states are doing that. You know, Alabama, South Carolina, some of these different states have already put in and said no Common Core. There's Obamacare being shut down in Georgia. There is just it's coming down to the states and the state sovereignty. And somehow, some way, Dan, we always end up in the summer of 1787, don't we? Those men, those great men, and they didn't all agree. They disagreed on different things, but they did agree on one thing, that the federal government should have certain things that it does, certain things that through a collective you've got the ability to do, through a collective of the money from each one of the states and the people from each one of the states, we can put together a national military, which has always served us well. You know, the post office, I have to give them credit. They've done a pretty good job, even though they've been bankrupt most years of my life. But they still get the mail there, relatively quick, on time. And they have a huge track record of getting it accurate for the most part. But there are most things the federal government tries to do, they just cannot micromanage. And so those men... during that summer of 1787, sat down and said, you know, we're going to give a few things to the federal government, and everything else we're going to leave up to the states. Everything else. Because they knew what kind of chaos we would end up in if we followed the lead of many, many nations throughout history where a few people tried to control the whole. And that's why we've got the liberty that we've got. You know, Common Core. Nationalize our schools. Is that insane or what? You can't tell me that we don't have bright men and women in each school district that aren't able to educate our students. We created the greatest generation by doing that. Look at the prosperity that we have. Look at the smarts we have. They start using the calculations to try and rate us on our education. But if you leave out some of these places where the socialists have been in control, like Chicago and Detroit, downtown Los Angeles, you pull those statistics out, and our students are smarter than anywhere else in the whole wide world. Pull the Democrats out, pull the socialists out, you don't have a problem. Our health care, we got the greatest health care in the whole wide world. Got to tear it apart, folks. Why? Because, you see, the left has got a different viewpoint than you and I've got, Dan. They believe they want to make everything fair. And you can't make everything fair. You can't sanitize the world of its problems. This is Flag Day, folks. This is that day we look at that star-spangled banner and we remember back throughout history the things that have happened to save this great nation and to save the world from tyranny. What a day. How seriously do we take it? Go to the grocery store. I want you to say something to the guy that's waiting for you in line. Happy Flag Day. Maybe they don't even know. Start up a discussion about the basic principles that we've got. Support a candidate. Find a candidate. Find your local candidates, especially your school board candidates. You better be supporting your school board candidates because that's where the left has taken their win. They know they can't win fast. They know they can only win by baby steps, and they start in our schools. You know, Dan, those founding fathers understood that state sovereignty, local sovereignty, was hugely important. You know, that's why we support candidates like Sid Miller. Sid Miller did a lot of talking about state sovereignty this last weekend when I was at the convention. It's hard to believe it's already been a week. I wish I could go back. I wish I could do that all over again. Looking forward to, hopefully, the Republican National Convention will be in Dallas. That will be a great day. I'll be able to go every day to that convention. It will be very, very nice. But, you know, sovereignty, folks. The sovereignty of being able to control what goes on in your home. The sovereignty of being able to teach your child that there is a God, that there is a creator, and that the standards that he lays out are good for man. You know, we as Christians don't just preach Christian principles because God tells us to. We preach them because they're tried and true to create a better life for you. You live by those principles. You live by an understanding that there is a creator, that man is not the big chief in this world. We look at the things that Jennifer Montrose has been doing over there in Louisiana. Our good friend and co-host on Tuesday for American Sovereignty has been fighting the animal rights activists. These are people that believe that the animals are more important than human beings. They will fight to the living daylights for a dead cockroach before they will a young human being in the womb. A lot of those people believe that there's too many people on this earth and that the earth would be better without human beings. I mean, what kind of insanity is that? Well, Louisiana has asserted its state rights against the federal government and said, no, you're not going to come in here. The federal government is not going to make the decision that Tony the Tiger cannot be kept by Michael Sandlin, who's somebody who's taken care of Tony very well for 14 years, and that the crazies in the environmentalist movement aren't going to just come in here and tell our state what to do. Parental sovereignty, state sovereignty, local sovereignty, and if you're hearing the horn, we've got this guy next door, Dan, and this is one of my big pet peeves. I hate people that are rude. Do you hate people that are rude? I think we should go over there and talk to this guy who's always honking his horn out in front of this house over here. I'm going to walk this way and see if we can give him a dirty look. I'm not quite sure, but every day they sit out here and honk the horn. And I think it's because they're waiting for somebody to come in, and it is not a good thing, folks, to sit there honking your horn. My block.
Yep,
anyways, I'm giving him a dirty look right now. I see him in the red, their red Suburban over there honking the horn. Anyways, folks, not to get off on a crazy subject, but that's just one of my pet peeves. Let me tell you, if there's anything that's ever going to happen, I'll tell you, if any boy comes up and drives up to the house and goes honking the horn for my niece to come out to pick her up on a date, she won't be going out the door to that date. You know what I mean? I'll be coming out that door and telling him he can just go home now. I think it's one of the rudest things we Americans do is sit out in front of somebody's house and honk. If you're so lazy, you can't get out of the car and go up to the door and knock. Or get on your cell phone and do a little bit of texting and say, I'm here. But this goes on every day, morning, noon, and night, that guy over there. And I thought I moved to Texas because we had better manners here. But some people don't have better manners. Anyway, while we go off on that crazy subject.
Oh, well.
and Dan, I want to take it into another direction. What we're talking about this morning has a lot of legs. Because one of those legs is freedom of entrepreneurialism. And as we look across the United States, we see Texas and California and New York and Florida. And what do those states have in common? Those states have number one and number two in common. Yeah, Texas and Florida are number one and number two on states where business is best promoted. And California and New York are number one and number two. Number one and number two is dead last. And you know, you can look at the two different types of government that are in control. For the most part, the conservatives are in control of Florida, not quite as in control as they are here in Texas. But we promote freedom to open up your own business and the freedom to do business. And the people in Florida and Texas understand that the more you tax a business, that those taxes just get passed on to the consumer. That's a part of the free market system. And New York City, especially, not all of New York. I think if they should make New York City its own little state. That would save upstate New York from a lot of hassles, I think. And I would say that a good portion of New York State would agree with me on that. I have very few friends on Facebook in New York City. But I do have quite a few friends up in New York, upstate New York, and they don't like it. They don't like the mood and the means of what goes on down in that big populated area that controls most of the rest of their state. And they don't like the fact that businesses are flying out of New York right and left, and people are flying out of New York right and left because they're being overtaxed. And the same thing in California. California is not happy with all these businesses flying out, and most of them are coming to Texas. We welcome them here. They'll find a rich environment of which to do business. And it comes back right back down to freedom, and it comes back down to the freedom that flag stands for. You know, folks, let's go to Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass understood how important freedom was. And you see, he left the bondage, he left the slavery of his masters, and he went out into the free market system, and he died one of the top 1% of wealth in the nation. He wrote prolifically. He had the ear of presidents of the United States. Abraham Lincoln, some others. And he did that because he had the freedom that flag stood for. That even during a horrific time in our United States, and slavery was a horrific time, it's a situation I really wish we hadn't gone through. But he had the ability to make something of himself. We've got that freedom here. Many countries don't have that freedom. If you were born into poverty, you just stay in poverty. If you were born in the social elite, you stay in the social elite. We've got men here, and I've got some problems with Bill Gates, a lot of problems. I think Bill Gates is not as smart as people think he is. I think if he really investigated thoroughly into Common Core, he would see the problems. I just think he's in a class all himself and doesn't pay much attention. Because even Bill Gates stands for most things on freedom. Because he understands, he started out with nothing in a garage. Became one of the richest men in the world. No place else can you do that here, except for under this red, white, and blue flag with its 13 stripes and its 50 stars. Because we promote that ability to do that. Mm-hmm. The current administration would like to squash that. They would like to regulate everything and tell everybody how to do their job. They'd like to really step in. We know because we've got Democrats that have blatantly said it. They'd like to take over the oil industry on a nationalized level. They'd like to take over the education on a nationalized level. They're trying to take over healthcare on a nationalized level. They worked on really hard on taking care over the car industry on a nationalized level. And, folks, if it worked, it would be great. If it worked, if it provided a great stimulating place for business to thrive, I'd be all for it. But history bears out that it doesn't do that. History bears out that it only squashes entrepreneurialism. You know, we can take it to another realm. We can take it to the welfare system that we've created. Man, when you hand somebody something, they don't appreciate it as much as they have to work for it. And if you're busy making all kinds of handouts, then people don't have the motivation to go out and work for it. There's been times in my life, and I of course the last 10 years, I've been a stay-at-home mom. I've been a stay-at-home uncle for my three nieces and done work on the side and different things. But before that, down in Grenada and Trinidad, I was working 12-hour days, and I was proud of it. I was proud of the work I was doing. When I was in Indiana, I was working 180-hour weeks, folks. 180-hour work week. Can you imagine? All I did was work. It was great. I was having fun at what I was doing, but it was hard work, and I was proud of it. we've created a system, we've created a welfare system that's destroying that flag and that freedom and that entrepreneurship by just handing things out to people. You know, I always use the illustration. You get a 16-year-old boy, and he wants to start driving, but what's the big goal? Want a car. Well, I tell you, there's two different kinds of parents out there. There's the kind of parents that buys them a car. Now, we had one of those examples in the Kennedys. Bobby Kennedy and his wife, every time one of the boys turned 16, they bought a car. And it was tradition. What did they do? They turned around and drove it into the pool, and everybody laughed, and then they went out and got another one. Well, you know, if you buy your kid a car and just hand it to them and they don't have to work for it at all, they don't take as good a care of it as if they've had to help earn that car or if they've had to earn it all the way. It's just a basic concept. It's really simple. And that applies to our welfare system in our great country. I've never really agreed with a lot of things Michelle Bachmann said during the primary. I happen to think she absolutely lied about 999 being an additional revenue stream, but she said something that was very important. She said that it was important for every American to have a little piece, even if they have to pay $10 a year in taxes. It's important for them to be part of the investment of this great nation because people take care of it better. All you got to do is look at most people that rent next to most people that are paying for their house. The people that buy their houses take better care of what they've got. If it's somebody else's, you don't have that motivation. It's an important concept, folks. That's why we support the candidates that we support. That's why we support the organizations that we support. And that's why we do this every week. Dan and I get on here and we rattle sometimes and we talk sometimes. We have good guests on sometimes. We're going to have some more guests coming up here soon. But it's because we believe in that flag. We believe what it stands for. We believe in the history behind it. We believe in the emotion that Francis Scott Key had when he saw that after the whole thing was over, that flag was still there. We believe in the sacrifice that many of our troops made over the decades, over the centuries, to stand for freedom. We believe in the entrepreneurs in this country that worked really, really hard to create something where they could employ other people. I've been in business. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to write somebody a paycheck and know that you're helping them to survive, helping them to pay their way through life. The entrepreneurs, the churches, and the other aspects of our great country, even our sports. And I know I make a lot of fun about sports. We got the Denver Broncos and the Dallas Cowboys and the 49ers. I've got close friends that support all three of them. And, you know, but I don't ever watch baseball, so I can't keep track of what's going on. But even in our sports and our traditions in this great country, that flag stands for all of that. And that's why we do what we do, Dan, and with that I'll pass it back to you.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, I believed in, I've been a patriot. I was three years old, and my parents gave me an album on all the patriotic songs. And I played that so many times, I drove them crazy. But it's, you know something? You know, it instills something into me. It really showed me, you know, what our nation stood for. As I grew older and I started studying people, you know, like Longfellow, like Thoreau, you know, Henry David Thoreau, when he stood up to taxation, you know, how he got kind of pissed off at everybody, and he went down to this little pond, I don't know, I'd say 5 miles out of Concord. And he built himself a little cabin, and he sat there and did some of his best writing. You had, you know, Paul Revere. He was a silversmith, as was his dad. But he believed in freedom, and he, you know, he looked at what the British were trying to do, and he said, no, it's not going to happen. And, you know, this was like, he was one of many, many, many people who finally stood up and said, you know something, this is wrong. And these people stood up and took on the most powerful military that the world knew at the time, and they beat them. Why did they beat them? One simple thing. They had the heart. They had the heart. They had that burning flame of freedom. And the British didn't. The British just did not have the will that we had. And we were willing to sacrifice everything because, you know something? We aren't going to put up with a government that's going to take over our nation and tell us what to do. Because we built this nation ourselves. You know, when we asked Britain for help, they gave us nothing, or virtually nothing. And we had to do it on our own. And this is what, you know, created this nation. And we said, no, we aren't going to let the British come in. We aren't going to let them tax us. All we ask for is representation. And the British looked at us and said, you're going to come to Parliament and put your 2 cents in? I don't think so. And we said, well, you're going to come into our country and run it? We don't think so. It's real simple. And today we're running into the same problem. We have a government that doesn't listen to the people. You know, we elect these people in, and then they forget that we're even there. And once again, it's time to say, I don't think so. It's time to stand up to these people and say, you think you're getting elected again? I don't think so. Because the power is with the people, not the government. And we're going to show them that. We're going to stand up and say enough is enough. And we did that in Virginia, and I'm very, very proud of our fellow patriots in Virginia for sending that message. And now what we need to do is make sure every other state follows their example, that proud tradition of what it is to be an American, that proud tradition of standing up against tyranny and saying no. We have our rights as citizens of this country. Nobody's going to tell me if I can own a gun or not. The Second Amendment tells me that. And all their little add-ons to the Second Amendment is a bunch of baloney. The Supreme Court never had that right, and that's well written in the Constitution. So if I want to own an AK-47 or another assault rifle, I'm going to go out and buy one. And if it's fully automatic, I'm going to buy it. Because you don't have that right. You do not have that right to take that right away from me. All you have to do is, if you don't want me to have an assault rifle that's fully automatic, it's go up there, please put in an amendment, and if it passes, you'll get your wish. If it doesn't pass, I have that right. And that is guaranteed to me under the Bill of Rights. And that's guaranteed to me under the Second Amendment. Just like the Tenth Amendment says, my state, my town, where I live, we have sovereignty. And you aren't going to take that away from us either. Nor are you going to take away our Miranda rights. Nor are you going to take my Fifth Amendment right. If I don't feel like answering your questions, tough cookies. Nor are you going to walk and go into my car or my house without my permission. I'm guaranteed that under the Fourth Amendment. And you, it's time that, you know, we listen to the Constitution, because our forefathers said this is the law above any other law. Our forefathers said that. It is above the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, are you listening right now? You better open your book on the Constitution. We said, no, you are not number one. You aren't head of the laws in this country. You're there to decide the difference if people are having a question on a specific law. And that is it. You have no rights to pass any. And the quicker you remember that, the more likely it will allow you to stay. If not, you know, our new government will make sure that you get a ticket to ride. Ride right out of the damn office. And if I have it my way, there's going to be term limits now for the Supreme Court as well. Because you prove that you cannot live up to the standards that true Americans placed on you. They placed a lot of respect and a lot of honor on you, and you have nothing but taken advantage of it. And the Congress, the same thing. If I, before the day I draw my last breath, you will have term limits. Senate, that goes for you too. Everybody's going to have term limits from now on. Because you obviously showed that you are not responsible enough to handle such things. You have taken advantage of this country for way too many years, all of you. And from us, we the people, we've had enough. And, you know, we have the right to protect ourselves, too. So don't come marching into our towns, you know, the BLM with guns again. Do not come into our towns, you know, any one of you, and start, you know, threatening our people, because the day is over. You threaten our people, we'll have people right there waiting for you to pull the first trigger, and it will be your last. This is not a threat. We, as a sovereign entity, have the right to protect ourselves against invaders, both foreign and domestic. that's written in the Constitution too. So there is no threat. I can guarantee you and I can assure you that we will not fire first. But if one of the federal government fires at us, you will have return fire. And that's just the way it is. We have the right to protect ourselves. And, you know, that's right in the Constitution. I am, personally, I don't like guns. But I have one to protect myself and my family. And I have that right. And you got to, you know, it's time you people started reading the Constitution, reading the Federalist Papers, and learning what our country stands for. Because obviously all of you have forgotten. And for our men in arms today, remember the oath you took. To uphold and defend the Constitution. And if your government asks you to go against the people, remember that oath. And side on the side of the people and not the government, because you don't work for the government, you work for the people. You are not there to protect the government, you're here there to protect us, we the people. And if the federal government asks you to do anything otherwise, you have the legal right to tell them to go stick it. And be true soldiers and stand up for the people who you are paid to stand up for. Never forget that. Because right now you have a government that's going to want you to bear arms against us, the people you were paid for to defend. And if that government asks you to do that, you turn your arms on them, not us. And with that, before I get myself in any more trouble, I'll pass it back to you, Scott.
We're sitting at about 20 minutes. You know, a little bit of news. Of course, you know, we got Baghdad. The Taliban are bearing down on Baghdad. And it looks like this morning Chuck Hagel, Chuck Hagel has gone ahead and authorized some of our military to head back over to the Gulf. Now, amazing thing, because, you know, George Bush said it would be very important for us to keep some people there to help make sure that we get this thing established right. And the Obama side said, no, let's just pull everybody out whether we win or not. Well, now Obama is dealing with the problems of it. Because I'm going to tell you, he's going to even have more problems if gas prices go flying through the roof. And I think he knows that. Politically, it'll drop him even further. He's down below the marks that George Bush had at any one point. He's lower in the polls now than George Bush ever was. But, you know, it's amazing. They're sending the USS George W. Bush over the Gulf, the aircraft carrier. So Bush is heading back over to the Gulf. And you know, folks, it again comes down to basic principles. And that's why I have a hard time understanding why when we don't get out and talk more with liberals. Because we've got all the basic premises behind us. And here's one of them. If you approach something from a weak standpoint, you are going to be perceived as weak, and that's when people are going to attack. If you approach things with a strong, forceful standpoint that you're not going to put up with nonsense, then you have less of that. And the President of the United States has proven that. He approaches the bench as the Commander-in-Chief weakly. He approaches it from a standpoint of, well, you know, we're going to try and negotiate, and let's just all be nice. Well, you know, there's a time for being nice, and then there's a time for being firm. And we can take this right down to dealing with children. I just had to deal with an incident of one of my girls smacking one of the other girls. Now, how do I handle that? Do I handle that firmly, or do I handle that kind of wishy-washy? Well, if I handle it kind of wishy-washy, what am I going to be dealing with tomorrow? If I handle it wishy-washy, then they're going to be smacking them around again tomorrow. But if I come in and I say, no, that is not acceptable, you can just go to your room and spend the rest of the afternoon in your room and think about it, then the chance of her smacking her sister tomorrow are little to none. She's not going to want to go spend her time in her room. And that goes with it. You know, folks, it's not rocket science. It is not rocket science. And I understand that the anti-war movement side. I really do. I hate war. I wish there was a way to end all wars and that we could just have peace. But history bears out that that's not always going to be the case. You're always going to have somebody that wants to take over somebody else's freedom. And when you do, you have to fight for it. You have to fight for that freedom. If you're walking through the mall and some strange person comes up and tries to attack your wife, you know you don't want to go around hitting on people. But there comes a time when you got to fight for her. There's a time when we have to fight for this great nation. And to take the weak, the very, very weak position that this administration has taken in foreign policy has got us into a lot of messes right now. That Russia is invading Ukraine. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Iran is just continuing on with their plans. North Korea is continuing on with their plans. But I think one of the best illustrations was the last time we dealt with Iran under Jimmy Carter. They took our people. Held them hostage, and the day that Ronald Reagan took over as president, the day he was inaugurated, they said, we think we don't want to do this anymore. Why? Because they knew that Ronald Reagan would take a firm hand if necessary. Did he want to do that? No, folks. He didn't want to do that. I believe that Ronald Reagan wanted peace just as much as anybody else. But there is the reality of what goes on. And what's going on over right now in Iraq could have been totally avoided. If we had just held our guns and stood up strong, but we had too many people in this great country who were putting down what we were doing and almost in some ways treating our troops the way we treated them coming back from Vietnam. I've seen some rhetoric over the last few years that was obnoxious for the good hard work that our troops did. Does that mean there's always perfection? No, there's not always perfection. But those men and those women over there working hard to help provide the Iraqis the freedom. Remember when Saddam Hussein fell, it was the Iraqis who knocked over his statue. They were tired of that tyranny. They were tired of the rape rooms. They were tired of what goes on. Our administration has been supporting terrorists. They haven't been fighting the terrorists. They've been standing up for the freedom of people and fighting against the Christians. And it's kind of an insane situation. But Dan, as we head up towards the top of the hour of our show, and this is about that time when we start talking about the other shows that we've got on Contending for Truth Radio, we want to give a big shout out to the Pundit Press. And Dan Wilson, you are now writing for the Pundit Press. That is an awesome thing. I've sat and read so many of your writings over the last couple of years that I've known you. And you're a prolific writer, some great things to say, and it's very nice that we're getting those out via the Pundit Press. And they are also archiving all of our shows that we do here on Contending for Truth Radio. Go to punditpress.com, and then you can find the link to Pundit Press Radio. And find some of the other great shows, Josh Berenstein and Brian Craig of course, a good friend, Kenneth McClinton, and his shows, and the Underground Professor, a good friend, Brian Glover, and his shows, and all the shows that are on there. If you like to listen to talk radio, plenty of archives and plenty of things to listen to, some great shows. We've got some of the other shows that we've got going on here on Contending for Truth Radio. We've got American Sovereignty, like we talked about on Tuesday nights with Jennifer Montrose, Dan and I, as we talk about sovereignty issues and different things. On Thursday nights, we've got Conover U with the great Rodney Lee Conover. Love dear, we have a great time on that show. We do some laughing, do some crying. We're going to have a great guest this Thursday, Rich Lowry, who is an economist and is really has a real good understanding of the nation's economy. He's going to have some great things to say, folks. If you've got in contact with a candidate that you're working with, I would encourage you to listen to that show and then get that candidate in contact with Rich Lowry. You know, our nation, for many decades now, has the Federal Reserve has considered wage increases as inflation. And it causes us quite a problem. It's one of the reasons why our wages are stagnant. And he's going to talk about that as well as many other things. We're looking forward to that. Friday, the last two Fridays we haven't had ladies Bible class. Last Friday I had a hard time getting logged into the show. I was going to do ladies Bible class from the convention, the GOP convention over in Fort Worth, didn't get to do that, and then most of the ladies were just gone yesterday. But this next Friday, we will go back to that on here on Contending for Truth Radio. Got some other great things coming up. Working on a show, putting together a show right now with some of the young leaders in the conservative movement here in Texas. We've spoken with Colton Buckley, who is the campaign manager for Sid Miller. Always want to give him big shout outs. We're going to put him together with some people and do a show with them, and then possibly segue that into a permanent show here on Contending for Truth Radio. So we're looking for that. Look forward to that coming up. And so I'm going to pass it back to you, Dan, for your opening, for your closing remarks, and let you talk a little bit about writing for the Pundit Press and getting your word out even more. It's going out to hundreds of thousands of people each week that they've got. Paying attention to what's going on at the Pundit Press as well as our shows. And it's an exciting thing, Dad, to have you out there and getting your words out there.
Well, I really appreciate it. I was really honored when our editor, Dan, came out and asked me to be one of the writers for the Pundit Press, and I look forward to writing more posts. And as a matter of fact, I'll be starting one shortly after the show today, and hopefully having it finished by early evening. And, it's great to be able to get the word out to more and more people, because this is the importance, what our Constitution stands for, what it means to be able to, stand up for our rights. My last post yesterday, I wrote a road, it was named The Road to Socialism, and I explained how we managed to go from the nation we used to be, just post-World War II, into the mess we have today, and explained every little step of the way. And my posts are not short. They're, on Facebook they look long. But something, I'm writing from my heart. And in order to understand what is going on, you can't be told just bits and pieces. You have to be told the entire thing. So I'm taking the time to write the entire message so that people can truly understand why we're in the position we're in now, or what our Constitution stands for, or what our specific amendments stand for, and why our forefathers did what they did. This is how we learn. And I hope that everybody, takes the time and reads my post and reads my articles on the Pundit Press, because this is why I do them, is to teach, not because I like to hear myself write or not because I want to be famous or anything like that. My idea is to teach and to inform people of what's happening today so that we can avoid this tomorrow. I don't want to have to go through this again. You know, I want my retirement to be in peace and harmony. You know, when I talk about using the use of weapons and things like that in the Second Amendment, I am the last person who wants to hurt anybody. But you know something? I also am the first person to protect what I need to protect. And today's piece is going to be on the Second Amendment, on what it means, and how it should be handled. And that's why I write. And I'm a very proud member of the Pundit Press now, and look forward to writing many, many more posts for you. And hopefully you'll get something out of it. And the same thing with our radio shows. You know, the Pundit Press has enabled us to reach hundreds of thousands of people. And we're all proud of that. You know, this is a good group. You know, the Pundit Press allows us a forum to reach more people. And this is what we want, because we aren't here just to hear ourselves talk. We're here to inform and educate. And the more you listen to our radio shows, the more you read our articles, the more you'll learn. This is a good group of people, and Scott and I are both very proud to be part of them. And, you know, Jennifer feels the same way. As well as the rest of our people and our happy little family here at Contending for Truth Radio. You know, listen in. You can learn. We'll keep you up to date on everything that we can. And we'll turn around and we'll do everything we can for the candidates running in each and every state. All you have to do is contact us, and then we'll be there spreading the word. We're here as true patriots, every single one of us, and all we ask is join in with us. And we ask one other thing, most major thing: talk to your neighbors. Don't believe that baloney anymore about not being able to talk about politics and religion. Because the two things you need to talk about today are politics and religion. Say that you believe in God, and say that proudly. Tell them why you're a Republican. That you're not just a Republican because you want to make money. That's the least, you know, that's not what being a Republican's about. A Republican's about the freedom to be able to become what you want. We don't want the government telling us what to do. We want to tell the government what we want to do. And if I want to create a company that's making $2 billion a year, and I'm willing to put the time and effort into it, so be it. Or if I just want to work for a company and make $60,000 a year, that's fine too. Or I want to just dig ditches. Doesn't matter. You have that freedom. When it will say, if this country goes to socialism, You won't have that freedom. You'll be told what to do. And I don't want to be told what to do. I want to do what I feel best and what I can utilize what I do best. So I can become the best I can be. And think about that. Do you want the government telling you, or do you want to make decisions for yourself? With that, I'll pass it back to you, Scott, for closing statements.
Well, and Dan, I think we had a good show. It was one of those shows where you and I just kibitzed back and forth. Those are always just as good as when we have a guest on, because we talk about some important things, very important things. And you know, I want to talk about Texas a little bit. You know, we got some great things going on here in Texas. Dan, we're working on getting you down here so you can be in the number one state and just instead of the number two state. We've got some great candidates. Of course, Sid Miller, Bob Hall, Connie Burton, Glenn Hegger, some great candidates we're supporting down here, and we're having a great time, Dan. I knew I was going to have more fun in politics down here in Texas than I was in California. I just didn't quite know exactly how much. Got some great things coming up here in about 6 weeks. We got the Red State meeting going on over in Fort Worth. Rodney Lee Conover is going to come out, finally going to get to shake his hand and give him a great big bear hug. We talk two or three times a week on the phone. We've become good friends. Of course, Rodney Lee has got the Conover U show here on Contending for Truth Radio on Thursdays with his sidekick. That would be me. Having a great time with that. But we're doing some great things, having some great fun down here in Texas. You're going to have to come at least for a visit, Dan, one of these days. I'm getting to go and do and see so many people. I met so many wonderful patriots at the convention last week, a lot of people that I've had contact with for quite a while, but not got to see and meet in person. I want to give a big shout-out to Bob Price and Merrill Hope of the Pundit Press, Brandon J. Darby, Brandon J. Darby of Breitbart, Texas. Let me tell you, they're keeping Texas in the news. Bob Price got to meet him and got to shake his hand and take his picture, making sure that this BLM land grab is at the top of the news. It was his article that made it to the top of the Drudge Report and made the nation aware of what BLM was trying to do here in Texas. He's down on the beach right now, taking some relaxed time, but still writing articles. Just saw that on Facebook. All kinds of good things going on here in Texas, and I'm proud to be a Texan. I've got my Scott Turner little Texas flag. Finally, you know, these little flags that it's about 5 inches by 7 inches long. I've got here sitting on my desk, and enjoy being Texan. So with that, we're going to close out with this song, Dan. One of my favorites.
I got a question before you.
Go ahead.
What were you paying for gas? $3.37?
$3.37 a gallon, Dan.
Well, you got
right now.
Here. I just filled it up my tank this morning, and it was $3.33.
$3.33. Oh, you got 5 cents on me. Well, I bet you, if I lived, I could find a $3.33 here in Texas somewhere.
That's right.
I just happen to know what it is at the corner.
That was out of the racetrack.
All right, folks, we're going to say goodbye. We're going to say it with the stars at night are big and bright.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. The prairie sky is wide and high, deep in the heart of Texas. Sage in bloom is like perfume deep in the heart of Texas. Reminds me of the one I love deep in the heart of Texas. Deep in the heart of Texas, the red. rabbits rush around the brush deep in the heart of Texas. The cowboys cry, "Yippee-yi!" Deep in the heart.